Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Your task will not be an easy one. Your enemy is well-trained, well-equipped, and battle-hardened.
There is not a liberal America and a conservative America. There is the United States of America.
Good night, and good luck.
Hey folks, it's Rick Wilson. Welcome back to The Elephant in the Room, the show where once a week we take a little mini podcast look at what's behind the curtain. What's going on in politics? What's the secret sauce underneath something you've seen as a major event? And folks, there are two big stories this week that I could put in place for this and make a great Elephant in the Room episode. The first is the return of Jimmy Kimmel.
Moments after we taped our show last night, the Mad Red Hatter wrote, "I can't believe ABC Fake News gave Jimmy Kimmel his job back." "You can't believe they gave me my job back. I can't believe we gave you your job back." We're even. And there's more. The White House was told by ABC that his show was canceled. No, they weren't. Something happened between then and now because his audience is gone and his talent was never there. That I can't argue with. Shut the f*** up. The freedom of speech is only for me. Do not interrupt the president. You almost have to feel sorry for him. He tried, did his best to cancel me. Instead, he forced millions of people to watch the show. That backfired bigly. He might have to release the Epstein files to distract us from this now.
With Disney showing some spine, some opposition, some strength, some character, and attention to their bottom line, that would be one of them. We could peel that back. But I think the bigger one, I think the more consequential story, is that Russia is collapsing. Ukraine has mounted, for the last 3 years, a scrappy, innovative, brilliant, determined battle against Russia. And there were a lot of reasons to believe, if you were a Russia fanboy, that Ukraine would die eventually. They would collapse. It would fall apart. But the elephant in the room is that Russia is collapsing. This is great news for the world. It's bad news for China. It's bad news for MAGA. It's bad news for Donald Trump. Let's get to it. So, for 9 months now, we've heard Donald Trump say over and over again, Zelensky has to give up land. Zelensky has to make a deal. Zelensky has to give up.
Of the war.
You're not in a good position. You don't have the cards right now. With us, you start having
cards.
Right now, you don't have your playing cards. You're playing cards. You're gambling with the lives of millions of people. You're gambling with World War III. You're gambling with World War III.
Russia will always win. They're the biggest, strongest. World War II, with all the talking points you could see on Russian state TV. Turn in RT, you hear the same talking points come out of the White House. But right now, Russian energy prices have collapsed. The Russian stock market has collapsed. The energy prices are collapsing because the Ukrainians can now attack almost anywhere inside of continental Asia. The range on their drones puts them within striking distance of almost any Russian energy facility that matters.
Ukraine doesn't have the big fat missiles dictators love to show off in parades, but we do have drones that can fly up to 2,000-3,000 kilometers. We had no choice but to build them.
There's some stuff out in the Far East that they can't hit, but for the most part, where the energy comes from, where the distribution centers are, where the refinery centers are, Ukraine is knocking them offline one by one by one by one.
So the Ukrainians have been very strategic. They are now targeting two kinds of oil facilities inside Russia. The ones that are exporting oil to other countries. This is where Russia's money comes from. And then the other depots where they hold the oil for domestic consumption. And obviously, you could have lines in Russia if those are targeted. That's political pressure. So financial pressure plus political pressure.
Russia's economy is driven by two giant factors. Energy and corruption. It's a criminal enterprise disguised as a country. And the Ukrainians have finally reached the point, the critical mass, where their drone technology is sufficient to overcome what's left of Russia's air defense systems. And they're knocking the hell out of them.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Putin can only fire his way through so many generals in a war that has cost him over a million lives of his own people. Young men going to die for the vanity of an old man is a story of war that goes back to the ancient days of civilization. But Putin is losing. He's fronting, he's bluffing, he's saying he's going to, you know, start, you know, using unconventional weapons if this continues, all the bullshit. His finger's on the nuclear trigger. It's a Russian lie as old as time. It's their one big bluff. But as Russia collapses, something else collapses too. As Russia collapses, so does a fundamental predicate inside of MAGA. And that is that the future was a Russia, US, China division of the world. We get the Western Hemisphere. Russia gets Europe. China gets Asia. That was the MAGA like thought leader idea of what the world looked like. There was also a MAGA thought leader idea that we and Russia were absolutely comparable nations because MAGA was leading the fight for white Christendom and Putin was leading the fight for white Christendom. Putin is not religious. He is in fact an atheist, but you know, you do you. And Russia is a corrupt country in every way. It is degenerate in every way. Divorce, abortion, all the things that MAGA says they hate are sky high in Russia. But Russia is collapsing. But they bet big on this. Look at the reputational damage Trump has sustained. I know, haha, he cares about reputation. By sticking with Putin all this time. He did it because they were feeding Trump and feeding Trump allies false intelligence about the status of this war.
It does seem, the one thing that is, I think, also positive from Ukraine's point of view, is that President Trump seems to have accepted that Putin was stringing him along. He said, again, almost a direct quote, he said, "I thought I had a good relationship with him, but that relationship turns out not to count for anything." That was almost humiliating for him to say that, because he believed that he could handle Putin. And of course, Putin has handled him. And that recognition that he is
being manipulated. The penny has finally dropped, do you think?
It's the loudest dropping penny in modern history. Yes. And I think it has. So his attitude to Putin and Russia seems to have changed. But being Donald Trump, we don't know what he'll think next month.
They have been stuck. I mean, when this is over, it will look more like a high-tech, modern version of the Somme in World War I than the mobility war of World War II or any other modern conflict. They have been stuck. They get a little territory, they lose a little territory. They get a little, they lose a little. They've outgunned Ukraine from the beginning. They've outmanpowered Ukraine from the beginning. They had air superiority. They no longer do. By the way, I told you a year and a half ago that we needed to hurry the fuck up on those F-16s. The Biden administration made a critical error. Jake Sullivan was wrong to delay a lot of U.S. weapons going in there. But They got them in the end. Right now, the Ukrainian F-16s are absolutely clearing the deck over Ukraine. They're shooting down cruise missiles at an enormous rate, shooting down drones, shooting down incoming ballistics.
Ukraine's 80th Airborne Assault Brigade storming Russian positions on the Eastern Front.
Deal!
Using U.S.-made weapons to try and dislodge Vladimir Putin's troops. Gains that would probably be impossible if Washington cut military assistance.
Sam!
This soldier, whom we can only name as Vasil, tells me. I don't know what to say. That would be tough, he says. The troops say U.S.-supplied weapons like this Browning heavy machine gun are helping them turn the tide because they're more accurate, more reliable, and more robust than what the Russians have.
You can see just how important military aid for Ukraine is for that country to stay in the fight. It's everything from rifles to surface-to-air missile systems to help Ukraine push Russia back.
And Russia's air force is shot. It's been very, very badly damaged. They're not mounting the same cadence. And they can't, and their order of battle in the Russian air forces is just destroyed. It's just wrecked.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
But it isn't just a war that Russia was going to be able to muscle its way through with human meat waves. Putin has destroyed a generation of young Russian men. He has killed his country. He has destroyed his country by doing this. And the Iranians and the Chinese and the North Koreans who are in this alliance with Putin, and the Cubans now are sending their own young men to die there. But they will die there. They will not win. The Ukrainians have taught people the value of resilience and courage and determination and the middle finger to an invasion, to an authoritarian-led genocide. And finally, as Europe decided, you know, we're not going to sit here and let this happen. We're not going to just take this. They knew American leadership had disappeared. The minute Biden lost, they knew. They didn't want to, guys. They fought it tooth and nail. They hated it. They did not want to. Their natural instinct, especially the Germans, was always, okay, we can make a deal with Russia. Yeah, let's not do that. Let's not do that whole 1940s thing again. Their assistance, their help, their ability to deploy technology into Ukraine helped fill the gap. Now, inside the Pentagon, Eldridge Colby and Pete Hegseth and a variety of other folks have been overtly pro-Russia.
The bloodshed must stop, and this war must end. That stopping the fighting and reaching an enduring peace is a top priority. He intends to end this war by diplomacy and bringing both Russia and Ukraine to the table. And the U.S. Department of Defense will help achieve this goal. We want, like you, a sovereign and prosperous Ukraine. But we must start by recognizing that returning to Ukraine's pre-2014 borders is an unrealistic objective. The United States does not believe that NATO membership for Ukraine is a realistic outcome of a negotiated settlement. Instead, any security guarantee must be backed by capable European and non-European troops. We ask each of your countries to step up on fulfilling the commitments that you have made. And we challenge your countries and your citizens to double down and recommit yourselves not only to Ukraine's immediate security needs, but to Europe's long-term defense and deterrence goals. The United States remains committed to the NATO alliance and to the defense partnership with Europe. Full stop. But the United States will no longer tolerate an imbalanced relationship which encourages dependency. Rather, our relationship will prioritize empowering Europe to own responsibility for its own security.
Overtly, they have looked at the list of weapons that Ukraine wants to buy and said, nope, 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 nope. They have said about U.S. systems, we're not going to let you do this, this, and this, and strikes inside of Russia. Well, guess what? Markets work. And so the Ukrainians have gone out and either built their own, and by the way, Ukraine is building what will eventually be a defense industry powerhouse in Europe.
In the past 3.5 years of war, it's innovation, namely when it comes to drones, that have been one of the saving graces for the Ukrainian army. It says that drones now account for 70% of Russia's losses on the front line. This one, a quadricopter, can evade Russian jamming systems and drop up to 6 kilos of guided explosives. Others, like the deep strike drones, can travel far. With a reach of over 1,000 kilometers, they can fly deep into Russian territory. Faced with fewer soldiers and a defense budget of $64 billion last year, which is less than half of Russia's, Ukraine has had to rely on the U.S. and the EU for weapons. But they've also been boosting their own industry to be less reliant on changing political views.
Our best, you know, guarantee is not relying on somebody's will to protect us, but rather our ability to protect ourselves.
Its own industry now produces nearly 60% of its needs, according to Ukraine's defense ministry. Manufactured locally, this decreases spending in Ukraine's already stretched war budget. For Ukraine's weapon makers, they say their low production costs and their expertise could be helpful to European allies, now that Donald Trump has said NATO countries should not rely too much on the U.S. The industry is seeking to triple its production.
I'm convinced we should not stop here and further develop our weapons industry. This is only possible if we enter international markets. Our present production is already well underway. It already has a high potential, and we have the ability to produce a lot.
With concern going up a notch in Europe after Russian drones were shot down in Polish and Romanian airspace, Ukraine's weapon industry argues that it can scale up and export, or in the least increase output to ensure Ukraine be less vulnerable in the future. Denmark, Sweden, Norway, and a number of other nations have already okayed plans to invest 1.3 billion euros in Ukraine's army and defense industry to make it, as Ursula von der Leyen said, a steel porcupine.
God bless you. Might as well get some out of this whore.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
But Europe filled out the gaps. And so now the strikes are happening deep inside Russia. Are they hitting apartment buildings like Russia does? No. Are they hitting schools, nursing homes? No. Are they hitting daycare centers and grocery stores? No. They are slowly dismantling Russia's energy and communications infrastructure. Gas in Russia is now about the equivalent of $25 a gallon, and it's getting worse. As they dismantle this, the ability of Vladimir Putin to use his influence on Donald Trump has faded.
President Trump signals support for Ukraine like we've really never seen it before. Real about face, posting online that Ukraine is capable of winning back all its land from Russia and calling Moscow a paper tiger.
And the reason you saw this yesterday is not because Trump has like had a moment of clarity and said, oh my gosh, we've been on the wrong side all along. We should have been backing Ukraine. The reason is because his own intelligence people are clearly now telling him, hey, things are getting bad in Russia. Winter is coming and there's no gas. Winter is coming and the natural gas pipelines are being blown up and disrupted. Winter is coming. And Vladimir Putin doesn't have an answer for his people. I read yesterday that they're having trouble bringing harvest in because of the lack of fuel. Now, China can help them a lot by, you know, hard currency and they can try to import food and everything else, but it's really reaching a tipping point. Putin has always been a brilliant manipulator and has always had a chip on his shoulder about the loss of the Soviet Union. He's like one of the 12 people in the whole world who regretted the collapse of the Soviet Union. But Ukraine is winning and Russia is losing. What happens when Putin goes? He's not going to be replaced by another Vladimir Putin. He's not going to be replaced by a guy with Putin's singular skill at manipulating Donald Trump. I mean, think about this, folks. Just 6 weeks ago, we had Donald Trump clapping like a trained seal as he welcomed Vladimir Putin on a red carpet that American soldiers had to get on their hands and knees and unroll in front of Vladimir Putin. Putin has embarrassed Trump. He's humiliated him over and over again. He's shamed him over and over again. And still, that wasn't enough. Trump still had whatever's on those tapes. I don't know if it's a live goat, a dead girl, whatever it is, whatever the hold is that Putin has on Trump, whether it's on video or psychological or something else, whether it's actual compromise or just mental manipulation, I don't know what it is, but that hold has never been broken until now. And you saw Trump at the UN suddenly flip the script. He did not do it because he likes Zelensky. He did not do it because he wants Ukraine to win. He wants Russia to win. He wants Putin to win. His people all want Putin to win. Tulsi Gabbard wants Putin to roll through the fucking streets of Kiev in a tank and slaughter every one of the Ukrainian leaders. She is a overtly pro-Russia shill at every level. But the intelligence that's obviously percolating up to the White House now, that's obviously cooking through the system now, is so bad for Russia that Trump is now fearing that he will be seen as siding with a loser. And there's nothing Trump hates more than being a loser, which he is, but we'll cover that another day, or being associated with a loser. He has backed Putin's play over and over and over again. But Ukraine is winning this war. As I record this, Ukraine has been striking the Russian fleet remaining in the Black Sea. The anti-missile systems are in Crimea and in the other Russian ports in the Black Sea are basically inoperative at this point. So Ukraine is hitting them with land and sea drones. The idea that a country without a navy is going to sink the Russian Black Sea fleet almost in its entirety should shock you. But if you've been paying attention to the courage and the determination and the craftiness and the smarts of the Ukrainian people, you would not be surprised.
It's Ukraine's naval drones that have truly revolutionized the war at sea. Lacking a traditional navy after 2014, Kyiv built one from scratch, not with steel hulls and sailors, but with silicon chips and remote pilots. We're talking about a swarm of fast, explosive-packed drone boats that have become the Black Sea Fleet's worst nightmare. There are two main stars of the show. First, the Sea Baby, Ukraine's earliest drone. Developed by Ukraine's security service, the GUR, the HUR, this is the heavyweight brawler. It's a larger drone that can carry a massive 850-kilogram warhead, powerful enough to cripple the Kerch Bridge and smash warships in the supposedly safe harbours. Then you have the HUR, the military intelligence's weapon of choice, the Magura V5. It's faster, smaller, and more agile. A sea-skimming assassin designed to hunt and kill moving warships in open water. Using swarm tactics, these drones have sent numerous Russian vessels, including the missile corvette Ivanovets and the landing ship Caesar Kunikov, to the bottom of the Black Sea.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
You know, I know someone from online. No, we don't know each other personally, but know from online for years. And teacher in Ukraine, college professor. And when the invasion happened, I immediately sent him a signal message. I said, oh my God, are you okay? Is your family okay? Are you going to get out? You got to get out. You got to get out. Because we all thought in the beginning of this war that Russia would be in Kyiv in a day or two. It would be over. That he would have done, you know, what Putin would have done, a Czechoslovakia 68. He would have done the same thing the Soviet Union did across Eastern Europe after World War II. Quick march, boom, bang, over. And he waited for a while. I saw the typing thing, you know. And he said, I'm going to try to get my family out to Poland. I have little kids. Little kids. And he goes, I'm trying to get my wife out. They can't be without their mother. He said, but I'm staying. I said, what are you going to do? And he's younger than me. I think he's probably in his mid-50s, early 50s. And his wife's much younger. He goes, I'm an old man. I don't know if I'm ready to go fight on the front. I don't know if I'm, if I'd be useful on the front. I can't run, 500-yard dash anymore. He said, but you know what I can do? He says, I'm keeping my students for as long as they're in my classroom. And for the rest of the year, we're learning how to make bombs. And the rest of the year, we're learning how to make Molotov cocktails. And for the rest of the year, we're learning how we can go at them. This is not a guy who's like a burly macho motherfucker. He's not like a tough guy. All I thought was, if that's even 10% of Ukraine, Russia's screwed. These people won't stop. They never stopped. This is why I sort of obsess about Ukraine as a model against MAGA. What did they tell you when Trump won this time? We're going to do Project 2025. You're all going to shut up. We're going to destroy you. Our agenda is the only agenda. You will be crushed. There's little green shoots out there, folks, right now. I'm not giving Disney a ton of credit because they lost a lot of money. But the reason they brought Kimmel back wasn't just the money. They also figured something out. Bullies and invaders and tough guys and bad guys, they rely more on fear and on having a few key allies to enforce their will than they do on legitimacy and persuasion and being the kind of leaders that people want to follow. No one in Ukraine woke up in the morning and said, man, you know what we need is Putin to invade. No one. Very few Americans wake up in the morning and say, you know what we need is Donald Trump and Brendan Carr to say who can be on TV and who can speak.
Now, listen, you know, if you step back, what's happening here is, I think President Trump is fundamentally reshaping the media landscape. And the way he's doing that is when he ran for election, he ran directly at these legacy broadcast media outlets, ABC, NBC, CBS. For years, government officials just allowed those entities with execs sitting in Hollywood and New York to dictate the political narrative. And he has fundamentally changed the game. And you see that really having consequences that are just rushing all through media. The thing that was really important to me in all of this was that the new owners of CBS came in and said, it's time for a change. We're going to reorient it towards getting rid of bias, to looking at fact-based reporting. They said they're going to get rid of invidious forms of DEI discrimination. At the end of the day, that's what made the difference for us in terms of our review at the agency.
Yeah, and so again, when Ana Gomez writes, you're imposing never-before-seen controls over newsroom decisions and editorial judgment in direct violation of the First Amendment, you say what?
I think it's time for a change. And the procedures that we put in place in this deal have lots of precedent. For instance, there's been ombudsmans put in place by the FCC before. We're putting a bias ombudsman in place here. We're addressing DEI. The prior FCC during the Biden years put pro-DEI commitments in different transactions. And so we're unwinding that type of approach. And we're frankly taking a trust but verify perspective here. I think this could go a long way to restoring America's trust in media. And again, the media itself, I think, has undermined itself over these last couple of years. When you look at the stuff that Colbert is doing, the idea that, a partisan carnival makes economic sense, these are business decisions at the end of the day. And again, I think it goes back to President Trump because this facade of gatekeeper legitimacy that was conferred on these outlets is going away. And we're just seeing a lot of dominoes fall as a result of that.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
No one in America wakes up in the morning and says, you know what I want is more White House control of the economy, more White House control of what businesses get to prosper and which ones get to fail. No one wakes up that way. No one wakes up and says Project 2025 is the greatest thing since prepared mustard. And man, we should really have more government control over the rights and liberties of every American from some guys in D.C. I come from the Cold War generation, the last Cold War generation. Came into government in 1988. Russia was still in play. The cracks were showing, certainly. By the time I left government in 1993, Russia had fallen. The Soviet Union had collapsed. For 70 years, it looked like an edifice that would never fail, a system that could never be broken. The inevitable victors. For 70 years, that's what they looked like. Because they were immoral, they were unethical, there were men who understood power. But in the end, they fall. When Russia invaded Ukraine, it looked like nothing could stop them. They were unbelievably massed, rolling in toward Kyiv. Nothing could stop them. You know what could stop them, though? You know, the SVR guys pair dropped into Hostomel airfield. Nothing could stop them. You know what stopped them? Ukrainian kids, old men and women, young men and women, people who said no to oppression, no to invasion. They're going to win in the end. Putin's going to fail in the end. By the way, the moment Putin fails in Ukraine, he falls out a window. He knows that, by the way. His survival time is measured in hours after Russia withdraws. But that lesson of determination, of sticking it out, of fighting to the end, of never, ever, ever ceding the ground of freedom is one we should really be thinking about now. America is going to have a world if we fight and stand post-MAGA, post-Trump. There are a lot of tensions inside MAGA. There are a lot of cracks inside MAGA. Trump is the universal adhesive that held together this horrifying coalition of terrifyingly bad people. What you saw at the UN, Grandpa Ramble Pants.
You have to end it now, Sid, I can tell you. I'm really good at this stuff. Your countries are going to hell. In America, we've taken bold action to swiftly shut down uncontrolled migration.
Donnie in the nursing home telling war stories. It's not going to get better. It's going to get worse. It's a real lesson. Ukraine is winning. MAGA is losing. And that's why you should keep fighting. Thanks for listening to The Elephant in the Room, folks. Thanks for also reading the Friday Brief on my Substack newsletter and tuning in to the Lincoln Project podcast and the Enemies List podcast. Appreciate all of you. Lincoln Square has been growing by leaps and bounds. We're really delighted by that. Lincoln Project has been growing by leaps and bounds again. We're really delighted about that because, you know, this fight for next year is huge. The victory next year is essential. And the reason I want to talk to you about these things sometimes in this broader context than the news of the moment is that the fight ahead between MAGA and freedom is real. And you, my friends, are all on the front line. I'm there with you. Talk to you soon.
The Lincoln Project Podcast is a Lincoln Project production. Executive produced by Whitney Hayes, Ben Howe, and Joey Wartner-Cheney. Edited by Riley Main. Hey, folks, if you want to support the Lincoln Project's work against Donald Trump, Elon Musk, and this MAGA craziness, go to action.lincolnproject.us/helplp. If you'd like to get in touch or have suggestions for a guest or a show topic, or just want to say hi, our email is podcast@lincolnproject.us. For our MAGA friends, please, no more nudes. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you again next time.
The
and good luck.